Perek Gimel Mishnah Yud Zayin. All right, we're going to finish Perek Gimel. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah gives us a list, a rather famous list, and the question is, what's special about, or what's similar about these four pairings? Main Torah ain't Derech Eretz. So we already learned in the Mishnah Derech Eretz Kadmo LaTorah that the expression Derech Eretz in Pirkei Avos has two interpretations. Rabbeinu Yaina, obviously, what would Rabbeinu Yaina say Derech Eretz means? What do you think? Rabbeinu Yaina says it means Musar. What else? Right, the Derech HaMusar. And the Rav says it means finances. So, apparently they're both true. It ain't Tyra, ain't Derech Eretz. It ain't Derech Eretz, ain't Tyra. If there's no, well, if you say there's no parnasa, there's no Tyra, then it sounds similar to Main Kemach ain't Tyra later, actually. So I guess from the end is Pirish, it's better. If there's no Tyra, there's no Musar. If there's no Musar, there's no Tyra. So Tfesrael is troubled by the fact that there are non-Jews who don't believe in the Tyra, that are Balei Derech Eretz. And how does that fit with the idea of a main Torah in Derech Eretz? So he says something interesting. I think it might be controversial, but Tfesrael was a rather controversial fellow. But he says that without morality, there's no Torah. Now, if somebody believes in a creator, in Schar V'Einish, and in Hasharas HaNeshama, those are the three principles that he says are basic to a concept of morality. A person has to believe that there's a creator, and that there's a concept of Schar V'Einish, and that there's some everlasting life to the neshama. And then there could be morality. If everything is an accident, and if we're just monkeys who evolved, so then why would it be that if you look at a video clip of a wolf or a lion in the forest overtaking a deer, destroying it and eating it, nobody would say there's something immoral about that. Somehow it's part of the natural order of the world. Is that one creature destroys another creature for its own benefit. So how would someone explain that a human being who destroys another human being for his own benefit is doing something that's inherently bad? What does inherently bad mean? There's no concept of good and bad in a world in which everything that happens is everything that evolved is by accident. Well, that happens to be in nature. It is that way by many creatures, not by all creatures, but by the creatures in the wild. But nevertheless, the idea of morality to someone who doesn't believe in God is for tikkun olam. It's because the world can't exist without some type of law. If there would be no laws, no one would be secure and everybody would be miserable. So then it's a practical matter. It's a practical matter to have tikkun ha'olam. Now, the problem with tikkun ha'olam is that means that there's nothing inherently wrong with me killing somebody. There's something wrong with me killing somebody and getting caught. Because that's what tikkun ha'olam is, that the world has to run. In order for the world to run, there has to be law and order. So if I'm not caught, then there can be no immoral reason for something. What's interesting is that historically, some of the most barbaric people, cruel people, were people who exhibited a personal kindness. But probably the Japanese and the Germans, among all of the Goyim, were the most kind and openly polite one to the other. And yet, when it came to World War II, they were the cruelest of people. Because
the Germans used to be impeccably dressed and they had great manners.
What was his point, though? What was the point?
That was superficial.
Because if it's only tikkun olam, if it's only for practical reasons, then if you make up a practical set of laws that allow you to live, then that's okay. And therefore the cruelty that exists. You believe that there's a morality because there's some higher purpose to being here, then there's something that's absolutely good or absolutely no good, absolute values. Very hard to understand how someone who doesn't believe in a creator can espouse absolute values. Obviously, if you don't believe in God, so you can outlaw bris milah. I don't think, what's the chiddush that a people that don't believe in God would say that a person shouldn't cut up his child? Doesn't seem like much of a chiddush. Olecha hiragnu kol hayayim zu bris milah. Gemara says, that olecha hiragnu kol hayayim. In your name, we're willing to suffer danger. So if you don't believe in God, so why are you being hiragnu kol hayayim? Then obviously not. So that's this idea.
Medicine thinks it's healthier.
Oh well, once medicine accepts that it's healthier, then it's good. I agree. I'm just talking about the those who are against bris milah. That idea.
For the godly reason.
Well, those who are against it are against it because they say you have no right to cut up another human being. You have no right to do surgery to somebody because statistically it's going to be a benefit.
I think what you could say is the absence of belief in Hashem results in a full sense of compassion because, for instance, Hashem said, kill all the Amalekim, and it was a mitzvah to do it. It was the right thing to do, but if you don't believe in Hashem, it's...
Al tetzadeh karbe. Right. Alright, so that's the first one. It's true, you're not a conventional guy, there's something wrong with your Torah. I was explaining really the reverse, which is the chiddush that in Torah in derech eretz, that there's no sense of morality without a idea of Torah. So he's explaining Torah here as the value, the core value of Torah.
Can we say that there is morality? It's just their own brand's morality.
Well, that's not morality. Morality has to be absolute. Morality, by definition, is an absolute value. It can't be arbitrary. That's what it means. Morality means doing something that you'd rather not do because it's the right thing. Anyway, im ein chachma in yira, im ein yira in chachma. This is also chiddush. The two values that it's saying go together. There's no wisdom, there's no yiras Hashem. If there's no yiras Hashem, then there's no wisdom. Well, if there's no wisdom, there's no yiras Hashem, that's easy. A person that doesn't learn, he doesn't know what yiras Hashem means. You have people who make up their own Yiras Hashem and they wash their hands all day or they do other things that are not Yira. They're just things people do obsessively without any wisdom. Now, so without Chachma, there's no Yira. Im ein Yira in Chachma, there's no fear of Hashem, there's no wisdom. Now, the question is why? Why can't you be a wise person without Yiras Hashem? Right? This follows an understanding that to achieve Chachma requires amelus, requires hard work. Now, if a person is reading up on zoology because he enjoys it, there's one young man in my shir who loves to learn Hilchus Treifus. Anything to do with the gory parts of the animal, he loves it. So he comes into the Mishmer every week, and he took that sefer, you know, with all the pictures, and he knows about Pel. That's his thing. I brought him tonight. I told him that an article on today's Chol of Stam. On today's Chol of Stam has an issue of treifus because of surgery done to cows, which is a debate. The Rabbanut in Israel no longer accepts Chol of Stam from America as kosher because I believe it's because of the surgery. I'm not sure. But so I brought him the article. It describes the holes in the stomach. It describes the whole thing. I tried to talk about it at the Shabbos table, you know, the ladies would get upset. They always get upset when these things happen. But he loves it. So what my point is that without amelus, the person really, if you just like something, so you can study it to a certain degree, and beyond that you get tired, you put your head down, you go take a nap, or you go out to eat. If a person wants to really have chachma, he has to be an amel. He has to really feel that he has to push himself. If a person doesn't push himself, it's very hard. There are people who, for one reason or another, enjoy chachma. Sometimes shalai l'shma, they're honored for it, and they're amelim. But generally, for the hamayinam, for most of us, if there's no yiras Hashem, there won't be chachma. Because to push yourself to be able to know the intricacies of learning requires Yiras Hashem in order to get there. Im ein das ein bina im ein bina ein das. That's a big chiddush. What is das? Das is knowledge. Bina is the ability to extrapolate knowledge, to be able to compare things, to use knowledge further. Well, again, one side is pashut. If you don't know anything, you can't extrapolate and learn out new things. From what? You're starting with zero. You can't grow anything. But the second chiddush, if there's no ability to grow knowledge, then there's no true knowledge. The knowledge is very limited. If someone tells you that when there's a red light on the corner of Ocean Parkway, you have to stop, you don't have the brains to know that that means you have to stop by every red light. So you're hopeless, because no one could possibly tell you about every red light in the city. Now that's a very simple thing, that you stop for a red light. But the same thing is true in general. A person has to be able to extend a piece of knowledge he has to new areas in order to really be a smart person. So Chachma is limited. If the Chachma is limited, it's like the Gailam. Right? The Gailam did exactly what he was told, and nothing more. So he had the Das, he had the knowledge, but he had no Bina. He had no ability to learn from one thing to the other. So that's the idea in the Mishnah, that Im Ein Das Ein Bina, Im Ein Bina Ein Das. Has to go together. Well, a Kavachaymer certainly, because Kavachaymer is based on a person's choice of decisions. Zereshav is Halchav Shabasinai, so it's a little different. But we know what it means. If you have seeds, you don't have a garden. It's like saying, without seeds, you can't have a garden. Without planting seeds, you also can't have a garden. So Das are seeds. And Bina are the planted seeds, the things that allow the seeds to grow and give you the ability to process things. And to know something more. And finally, Imein Kemach Ein Torah, Imein Torah Ein Kemach. So, there's a rule that everyone darshans things for himself. So the rule of Imein Kemach Ein Torah usually is you have two people sitting. One person is sitting and learning, and one person is working. So you say, Imein Kemach Ein Torah. So the one who's working says, you see, you can't just learn without working. The one who's learning says, you see, if I'm learning, you're supposed to support me. You're supposed to help me. And they're both right, but each one has it backwards. Each one should be saying the other thing. But that's the idea. The idea that the main kemach, again, one side is pashut. If you don't have what to eat, you can't learn. The second side, the main Torah and kemach, so that's the chiddush. See, in every pair, im ein Torah and kemach. If there's no Torah, then there's no kemach. So how do you understand that? There's no Torah, there's no Kemach.
Maybe the Schar, Parnassa is dependent on Torah.
No, that's supernatural, but I'll tell you the way I think of it. I have this idea that life without Torah is what? Many years ago, I read an article in the time we were getting magazine, with all the beautiful pictures. No, National Geographic. National Geographic. So, life would never have anything worth repeating in a shul. But nice pictures. National Geographic had an article about, I think it was the life of a beetle. Why I read it, I don't know. Someone must have left it in the reading room. But it's a very sad life when you think about it. Basically, the beetle, most insects are born and spend the rest of their life preparing to create the next generation. Because they don't really do anything else. They don't go on vacations. They don't go to Florida. They don't go to movies. They basically are busy a whole day just gathering food, preparing a nest, taking care of the young, and dying. Then the young do the same thing. So it's kind of a pathetic existence that they have. Everyone just exists, so the next one should exist, but nobody ever gets anywhere. Because, you know, for 5,700 years, all they're doing is doing the same thing. If you take a human being who has that type of existence, he basically earns money and spends the money and hopefully raises a family. He's got his vacation once in a while in Florida. He goes to the movies too. But the existence, if there's nothing more, is kind of sad. What do? You work hard, make money, but you have to eat. So you eat, and you spend the money on the rent. And, you know, you pay your insurance. Then what happens next January? So you start all over again. Make money, you spend the money, and you live to do it again. So it's not a real existence. So that's the main Torah and Kemach. The purpose of the constant Kemach has to be to create something more. If you're not creating something more, it's very difficult. But first, I'll also point out it refers to Kemach, which is a simple existence. The people don't need fancy existence for Torah. Who are you? I'm a kosher chachmasa merubei mimaisav. Somebody whose wisdom is more than his actions. L'mahu daim le'ilan shanafim merubim. He looks beautiful, he knows a lot, but it's shallow. His roots are shallow. A wind comes and turns the tree upside down. He's compared to a tree that grows in a place that's not proper for the growing of a tree. So its roots are shallow. So even though it looks beautiful, a wind blows it over. The same thing with the frumkeit of someone who knows he's wise, but doesn't practice it. Somebody who's meisim, more than his chachma, similarly, ilan shanafa muwatim shrasha merubim, shafilu kol ruchishabai lambayis v'noishus bayi emas iz meisim im kaima. If his roots are deep and solid, so nothing will blow it over. Shneva keich v'hayok keich shasol abayim, like a tree planted near water, and its leaves are a pleasure. Times of hunger, he has no worry. I want to just tell you something agricultural. If you plant a tree, and people think you plant a tree, you got to water it. Probably true. The more you water a tree when you plant it, the worse off it is. And the reason for that is that a tree is as healthy as the depths of its roots. A tree with shallow roots gets knocked over easily. A healthy tree has deep roots. The nature of a tree is that it shoots its roots down to get moisture and to get nutrients. If you go to the tree and you give it plenty of moisture, you soak it with water, then its roots won't grow deeply. So it requires the heavy borrowing for it to happen, which is really what our generation is discovering, that if you raise children, you just give them everything, so then there's no they don't have the, like the Mishnah says, the wind blows them over and they're gone.
When it says here, is it referring to Torah?
Yes. If somebody has Torah wisdom, doesn't put it into practice, then it's beautiful, but it's not lasting.
But you can get a lot of
So he explains on the bottom, which we didn't get to today, it was a big Mishnah. He explains here on the bottom that Torah has to be learned for two reasons. For the Torah value and for the Lamaisa value. And one without the other is worth something, but it's not the complete Torah. If someone learns just to know what to do, he's missing the mitzvah part of Torah. If someone does just for the mitzvah of learning and doesn't care about what it tells you to do, so then that's the Chachmas and Merubah Mimaisa.